Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 5-on-3 WFUV Sports's best, if only, NHL and hockey podcast. I'm James Burley, and I'm joined virtually today. We are no longer at Fordham University. I mean, I'm still in the area. Jack Warner still in the area. Spoiler alert, Jack Warner's on the call. And we do not have class anymore, so we're doing Zoom again. That stinks, but what is great is that I'm joined by two fantastic guests. And I'll go to him last because I already mentioned him. Tucker Austin is here, donning a beautiful New Jersey Devils hat that I wish you all could see. And Jack Warner is here, and he just fixed his hair because he doesn't have a Devils hat on, but he's got the Red Wing shirt to boot. So we got a lot of hockey representation from teams that wear red in the Eastern Conference that sucked this year. So I'm gonna throw it over to Tucker first. How's it going, brother?
It's going all right. I mean, the Knicks just got bounced, so that's kind of unfortunate.
Oh yeah.
But in terms of New York as a whole, I think the community is really happy that the Rangers are doing well and continue to do well. Great game seven last night that we're going to get into, and I'm really excited for. And two awesome series coming up, so just really excited for even more Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, and to Tucker's point about the Knicks, I think New York is, having a big, deep breath, kind of sigh of relief that you didn't see the Rangers and the Knicks bounced in the same exact round of the playoffs, because I really do think this city would have exploded. No, it's great to be here with you guys. I was actually saying to Lou the other day that, I was just saying to him how I think this season felt like the longest season because of like covering the team, covering the Rangers. I think this is the most attention I've ever paid because it's always been one of us at every home game and then religiously sitting in the living room watching away games on TV. But I said to him, I was like, the season felt long until we got to the playoffs. And now it's like, I can't believe we're here. It's conference finals. I feel like all these series, even some of these series that have gone to seven games, I think just the intensity that we've seen in these playoffs so far, and just being handed some great series, I it feels like everything has flown by, but this is just such an exciting time of the year. So my boys got bounced, RIP Bruins, but no, it's great to be here, and we got a very, very, very exciting conference final set up this year, which I'm really excited to talk about.
Yeah, for the second time in 3 years, you mentioned it, the New York Rangers are in the Eastern Conference Final, which is remarkable to say the least. They've had quite the year. President's Trophy, seven straight wins to open up the playoffs. And then they take it away from Carolina in dramatic fashion in game six to go on and secure their place in the conference final. They're going to be facing the Florida Panthers. But we got to talk about game seven, which happened last night on the West Coast between two Western Canadian powerhouses in the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers, the favorites. Vancouver were home, of course. And I guess we have to start in the second period because that's when the big guns came alive for the Edmonton Oilers. And when I say the big guns, I mean Zach Hyman and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, because those guys have been the guys for this Edmonton Oilers team. This is the first time, and this is something that I only briefly considered last week, Tucker, if you remember. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago, the last time we were on. I was critical of the Oilers for not being as much of a hockey team as the Canucks, but I was equally praising them for having scoring coming from guys like Zach Hyman and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins specifically. They get on the board here in the second period, 3-0 lead after two for Edmonton. Finally, this team has contributors in the playoffs that don't wear the number 97 and don't wear number 29. And for that reason, they're back for the West to the Western Conference Finals for just the second time since 97 joined this team. So this is a massive opportunity for the Oilers. Tucker, I'm throwing it to you. Were we expecting this? Because I certainly wasn't. I gave them credit where it was due, but I did not think they'd get through the Giants that are the Vancouver Canucks. They were out of that game. Even in the first period, I will go back, they were outshot 12-2 in the first 15 minutes. So this Edmonton team was better on the day. They rose to it. Did you see that coming? I did not.
What a ride for this Oilers team. That's really all I could say at this point. From like start of the season issues with coaching and with locker room issues and trying to get the whole team on the same page, finally turning all that around and putting together a really solid season and then actually having success in the playoffs. We've seen time and again this Edmonton Oilers squad with this core has just been incapable of making it to later rounds of the playoffs. So I think it's a huge step that the Oilers were able to get to the Western Conference Finals this season. And I think it's an also a huge step, like you mentioned, that they're getting production from players that aren't the primary guys. It's not just the McDavid and Draisaitl show. It's the whole squad is putting in work. And I just think that there needs to be more from those guys. Like, it's nice to have the depth, and it's nice to have like three separate players with 20 plus points, which I think that's what the Oilers are sitting on this postseason. But when Connor McDavid is held off the score sheet in a game seven, that is a problem. No goals, no assists. I think it was like one shot. McDavid basically did not show up for game seven. And I think the Oilers are really lucky that they managed to escape that game with the series win, because Vancouver came charging back in that third period. They finally got out of their more passive scheme and started to get a little bit more aggressive. They put pressure on the Oilers, and they scored two quick goals to really make it interesting down to the wire. But like you said, the Oilers hold it out, and they win a really, really good series in Western Canada. And I think something needs to be said for Stuart Skinner as well. There were a lot of question marks surrounding him in the middle of the series, whether or not he can do it, whether or not Edmonton needs to make a switch in there, but they stick with their guy. And then Skinner gets it done in game seven. He closes the door, even though he lets the two go in the third period. That's good enough for the win. And I think it's going to be key that Edmonton keep getting production from their other guys. But I think McDavid needs to step up huge in this series against the Stars. And Skinner needs to keep the form that he has now rediscovered in himself if the Oilers want a good chance against the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, and this Oilers team just gives so much to unpack. But I think after watching that game seven, because you mentioned Nugent Hopkins, you mentioned, you know, Zach Hyman, and I think this just reinforces something that I've always said across several different sports. It doesn't matter what sport you're in. Your team is only as good as your role players. There are several different teams who have had stars lead their team. I mean, think about, I know this is a different sport. Think about that Brooklyn Nets team that had KD, Kyrie, and James Harden at the same time, and they had nothing to show for it because they didn't have enough role players. They didn't have enough guys to pick up that weight. This team, you know, the Oilers have always been a team that, yes, is led by the McDavids and the Draisaitls. But you saw, as we're mentioning in that game seven, McDavid's held off the score sheet. Yes, it's something that will be – that is something that's a little bit concerning when you first take a peek at it. But you definitely have to feel a bit of comfort if you are an Edmonton Oilers fan that you're seeing this kind of production from guys who are more so your role players. And I don't even want to undersell them. I guess I don't even know if role player is the right word either, because – you know, Zach Hyman has had basically a career year this season. But at the same time, you know, as you mentioned, kind of, you know, a funny way to put it, James, you finally saw leadership and you know, driving the boat from players who aren't McDavid and Draisaitl. Now, I do think I think the biggest MVP of this team, now that we're playoff time, because I don't think it gets talked about enough, is Chris Knobloch. The difference, the things that we were saying about this Edmonton Oilers team a few weeks into the season, which, by the way, were completely justified. That was a horrific start to the year. The way that this team shifted as soon as there was new leadership, I'm not taking all the responsibility away from the players. It was a great team all around. But the way in which this team moved forward the second that there was change in leadership from a coach who, by the way, was hired out of the AHL. He came from the Hartford Wolfpack. So the strides you saw this team make after the horrific start that they had, everyone calling them frauds, it was, to me, Chris Knobloch that was really the biggest piece in getting this team, you know, going in the right direction. And lastly, because, you know, Tucker, you beat me to it, that was going to be my main point, is the redemption arc of Stuart Skinner has been really a sight to see, because this was a guy that, you know, for the last couple of years has not been a goaltender that you really could put all of your trust in. You never knew what you were going to get putting Stuart Skinner between the pipes. And he was one of the biggest reasons that Edmonton won this series. I mean, Vancouver has been a scary team. They were a Western Conference, you know, favorite to go to the Cup for many portions of this, you know, regular season this year. And you just saw a full-fledged shutdown. I understand that there was a little more momentum at the end of game seven. They went on a bit of a run there, made things interesting in the late minutes of, you know, the third period. But the thing that impressed me the most from game seven yesterday, besides obviously, you know, Edmonton being able to score at the right times was the forecheck. I thought, you know, Vancouver wasn't able to get anything started. There were several points in that game where they couldn't get past their own blue without the puck getting coughed up somewhere because Edmonton was everywhere. It was a full 200-foot game for majority of that game, except for obviously, like I said, when things got interesting there in the third. But they did the job that they needed to do to get through a really talented Vancouver team. And I'm not counting the – I understand Dallas is a damn good team that's about to await them, and I bet they're favored. But I would not by any means count this Edmonton Oilers team out because they have a chip on their shoulder.
Well, this is McDavid's third game seven, and he was 1-1. And while he doesn't end up coming up big in this one, the Oilers as a team kind of showed exactly what you were saying, Jack, in that in the era of Chris Knobloch, they were playing the best team hockey they ever did in this McDavid Draisaitl era. And even at times when I thought that they were still frauds, they've proved me wrong now and beat the toughest team in the Western Conference for my money without the likes of their stars. And that
every single negative thing that I've said about the Oilers this year, I've been proven wrong about. I made jokes early in the season about Stuart Skinner still not being a good goaltender. We all called them frauds in the beginning of the season. And like I said, I do think that that was justified. It was objectively a horrible start to the season, but it really is crazy the various different things that we're eating our words on is the way this team has progressed this year.
And honestly, this could and should be the NHL's best and brightest dynasty, given the man that is their captain. This is the face of the league, the greatest player of our generation. And perhaps the most talented ever. Wayne Gretzky is on record saying Connor McDavid could do things that Wayne Gretzky couldn't. It's an admission from the man himself. So we are blessed.
Except to score goals in the playoffs, apparently.
Oh, well, there you go.
I look at his point totals from this playoffs, and I just want to slip this in right before we move on from the Oilers.
This is
21 points this season or this postseason, and he's got 19 assists. Like, is it ridiculous to ask Connor McDavid to score more goals? Is it that outlandish?
21 points is 21 points is a lot, though.
21 points is 21 points. Don't get me wrong. That's really great production. But I feel like a guy like Connor McDavid, it could maybe be a total closer to 30 if he was scoring goals like a Connor McDavid scores goals.
I completely agree he should be scoring more goals, but at the same time, I think it would be more cause of concern, again, if you weren't seeing the production that you're seeing out of other members of this Oilers team. If this was a more lopsided effort, because it's even true of the Rangers. I understand that the Rangers, you know, had a little bit of a skid there near the conclusion of the Carolina series, but again, it's still true of the Rangers as well when you're getting the whole team involved, how much better these teams can be. All throughout the regular season, the Rangers were, you know, sometimes getting those one-line team accusations. They had objective struggles at 5-on-5. Then you head into
still
the postseason. And still do. But you head into the postseason where they start 7-0. And over that stretch of that 7-0, Rempe scored a goal. Cooley scored a goal. You know, this wasn't in one of the games they won, but Jacob Trouba scored a goal. So besides, you know, Kreider, you know, doing his magic and Mika having a fantastic playoff that he's had so far, Vincent Trocheck as well, you saw how this Rangers team sort of barreled into the playoffs with a very emphatic start because they are firing on all cylinders. I think the Oilers can do the same and have been doing the same thing. If you're only as good as your role players are. I just think it would be more – I'm not disagreeing with you that we could see more out of Connor McDavid. You know, the guy that we call Mick Jesus probably could be scoring some more goals here and there, but I think it would be a bigger cause of concern if we weren't seeing the production that we're seeing out of a Nugent Hopkins or a Zach Hyman.
Right. And I think that gives us – a good chance to flip the script here and transition a little bit. We mentioned a great of the game who played for both the Oilers and the Rangers a moment ago, and Wayne Gretzky. You mentioned Jacob Trouba, and I'm going to bridge the divide there with Mark Messier because he's an award winner, The first of the NHL awards for the 2023-24 season was awarded on May 14th, the Mark Messier NHL Leadership Award, to the player who exemplifies great leadership qualities to his team on and off the ice during the regular season and who plays a leading role in his community, growing the game of hockey as determined by Messier after consultation with league and team officials. The winner was Jacob Trouba, the captain of the New York Rangers. And we looked through the list of some of these previous winners because, quite frankly, this trophy's not always on my radar. For as great of a player as Mark Messier is, I usually don't keep a keen eye on the Mark Messier NHL Leadership Award. But we've discovered that everyone who's been on this list either was a captain or must have had an A on their jersey at one point. And Jacob Trouba, I mean, we've got two Devils fans on the call, so it's not exactly the biggest fan club of the man here, but I would be remiss if I did not also mention that he is a terrific leader who, since being named captain, turned the Rangers into more of a force than they had ever been when they were doing that lame old six alternate captains a season thing. And quite frankly, they have been the best of the best in the NHL this season under his leadership and off the ice. He's a pretty good dude. Jack, you were singing his praise before.
Absolutely. You know, one of the cool things, and, you know, I've gotten to look a little more into it, especially, you know, covering the team this year, because you heard little chirps and things about it throughout, you know, media proceedings and different things when we get to hear about Jacob Trouba. You know, the guy is always involved in something when it's not hockey. He's, first of all, one thing that's really cool, I don't know if either of you guys have seen it, he makes art. He does different types of cool paintings. A lot of times he, you know, has them hockey themed. He's done really funny things where he covers himself in a layer of paint on the front of him and then jumps in, kind of like how he bodies people on the ice, just kind of jumps into the a blank canvas and you get like a cool like cutout. It looks like a hockey player, you know. So, but I say that sounds really random. Why the hell am I bringing up paintings? Because of how great of a guy Jacob Trouba is. Well, when he sells these paintings, a lot of them go to really phenomenal charities. He does a lot of work in the community. He's there's always some sorts of donations going through the art that he makes. Just a year or two ago, I believe, I think it was last year actually, you know, he works very closely with Garden of Dreams, which is a phenomenal foundation run by, you know, Madison Square Garden Group. Gave a law school scholarship to a young man who was greatly affected by the Sandy Hook shooting. So, you know, he's done all sorts of phenomenal things off the ice, which you got to understand the way that, you know, a professional sport eats up time in your life. You know, they're this is a year round grind and they're always on the road. They're always doing things. So for someone to, you know, assert themselves into just doing the best they can off the ice to make an impact and, you know, make people's lives better, make the community's lives better, you got to award somebody who's able to do things like that.
He's in good company. I'll give him that. Looking at the list of names here, Jacob Trouba, 2024. But if I go year to year, Steven Stamkos, Anze Kopitar, Patrice Bergeron, Mark Giordano, Wayne Simmonds, Derek Engeland, who kind of sticks out as maybe less so, but still a Stanley Cup champion, Nick Foligno, Shea Weber, Jonathan Toews, Dustin Brown, Daniel Alfredson, Shane Doan. The list goes on. A lot of great names. Chara, Crosby, Iginla, Sundin, and Chris Chilios.
And if I may add, another thing that I think is cool is this is only the first time that he's being recognized for these sorts of qualities at the league level. Last year, he won the Rod Gilbert Mr. Ranger Award, which is basically the same exact award. It doesn't always go to a captain or an assistant captain, but it's basically the same type of award, but for the New York Rangers, that's, you know, awarded to a Ranger player every year for, you know, a player that exemplifies, you know, being a great person on and off the ice. And he won that last year. I was actually in the building for it. They did a nice ceremony for him before puck drop. So I think it's cool that like this has been the type of player and type of person Jacob Trouba is. This is just the first time that he's getting recognized at the league level for it, not just the Rangers.
Well, hats off to him, and he'll be kicking off his playoff campaign this Wednesday when the Rangers take on the Panthers. Connor Ingram won the Bill Masterson Trophy, which is the sportsmanship dedication to hockey trophy, the goaltender of the Arizona Coyotes, and most recently awarded was the Selke Trophy to the likes of the Florida Panthers, Alexander Barkov, a.k.a. Sasha Barkov, who honestly is the closest we are going to get to a second coming of Patrice Bergeron and just his style of play, I feel like. Mirror images of one another, but absolute class act on and off the ice, and just such a beast going two ways. Unreal faceoff man, unreal defensive forward. Some of the nominees for the Jack Adams Trophy, which we will get the winner to tomorrow night, Rick Bonus of the Winnipeg Jets, who had one of the best turnaround seasons in a long time. Andrew Brunette of the Nashville Predators in his first year as the head coach there. And then Rick Tocchet of the Vancouver Canucks. And this is an interesting list because none of these four guys are in the conference finals. And only one was in the conference semifinals in Vancouver. So my question is this, because this is the last, we'll talk about this final award, and then we'll move on back into the playoffs. Was Peter Laviolette snubbed here? Was Paul Maurice not snubbed here? Seems logical to me that those guys would be awarded. I know Chris Knobloch came in halfway through the season, but hell, that should give him probably a leg up on some of these other guys for doing what he had done with this team. Am I missing something here?
I don't know. I mean, like,
Did DeBoer not coach the Dallas Stars to a Central Division win?
He did. But I think the turnaround that happened in Vancouver is really what's giving Rick Tocchet a lot of his points. How dominant the Canucks were during the regular season. And, like, this team has – the ups and downs have been crazy, and the resilience has been crazy too. The scrappiness and the come-from-behind wins have been electric this postseason alone for the Canucks. So maybe being as a nominee, Laviolette may have gotten snubbed, but I think like the award is for sure going to go to Tocchet.
Yeah, it has to.
Yeah, and I think context is important here too. And I think Tucker, you know, hit that nail right on the head. You know, I think I think if I was to compile the candidates, yeah, I probably would have nominated a Peter Laviolette or a Paul Maurice. I think, you know, either of them are incredibly deserving, especially I'm biased from covering the team. Peter Laviolette, especially heading in for the first, you know, his first season with the New York Rangers and, just leading the team the way he has this year, just being, you know, the team to beat basically the entirety of this season. But, you know, at the end of the day, not to take anything away from a Peter Laviolette, He didn't inherit a nobody team. You know, this was still a 100+ point team that he inherited, a team that was, kind of had a deflation in the playoffs last year, really didn't end the season, I think, in a way indicative of how good that team was last season. Paul Maurice, same thing, takes his team to a Stanley Cup final, has a historic, you know, first round of the playoffs where they knock out the Bruins. I mean, you know, these guys are accomplished, you know, coaches. And I think the biggest thing here is, again, just the context, the kind of team that Tocchet took over and flipped on its head. I think that's really the decider here. I do think he is the fitting candidate to win an award like this one. If he is of that pool of nominees, I do think he is the most fitting candidate just because of the turnaround. I think Peter Laviolette, he inherited a team that, like I said, was already good. I think was just kind of in a deadlock position of like, we have the talent, it's just not working with this guy that we have at the helm. I think Tocchet was, again, of the candidates, if I were to have nominated the candidates, I think my list would look a little different, but with what we have here, I think Tocchet is absolutely the right choice.
Well, I think we're all in agreement there. I do think that some short-sightedness, but they can only nominate three for the finalists. Going to go through some of the other bigger ones. The Calder Trophy is going to Connor Bedard, but Brock Faber and Luke Hughes were also nominated for it.
Luke
Hart Trophy. Yeah, there we go, Luke. The Hart Trophy is honestly, I don't know whether it, Kucherov, McKinnon, McDavid, that one's a tough call, honestly. It's a toss-up.
Quinn Hughes. I think we talked about it a little bit in the last episode that I was on, at least.
Yeah.
I think we got into it a little bit.
Who'd you have?
I think I had Kucherov, which was a wild take at the time. Yeah. But, yeah.
Quinn Hughes, Roman Josi, and Kale McCarr all up for the Norris Trophy. And Kucherov, MacKinnon, and Matthews up for the Lindsay Trophy. And then the Vezina, Bobrovsky, Demko, and Connor Hellebuck. So we're a month away from most of those. Keep our eye on them. Back to
that
the
Vezina
hockey.
Might be Demko's.
Really?
Maybe.
Bobrovsky and Hellebuck. It's tough to not pick one of them.
You can't make a bad choice in that three. That's the thing that's tough about it.
Yeah.
And you can only nominate three because there have been some phenomenal goaltenders who aren't getting their due in that list as well.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about some coaches. We'll talk with one that we saw coming. Rod Brind'Amour extended, as you would expect, with Carolina. And say what you will about their exit from the playoffs. It crumbled in game six. They didn't show up in games one through three, even though they did get it to OT. They just couldn't find a way to put the puck in the back of the net. Couldn't find a way to stay out of the box. They couldn't find anything to do with their power play. They deserve to lose that series. But consistently, over the past 3-4 years and beyond, really, this team has been consistently setting the standard in both the Metropolitan Conference, the Metropolitan Division, the Eastern Conference, and the National Hockey League as a whole. That's a slam dunk. It's a home run. I think having Rod Brind'Amour is great. The only thing is, if he was available, you just know he's getting every offer from every team that needs a head coach. He's going to talk to whoever would want him because he transformed that Hurricanes team into one of the best free-flowing transitional hockey teams in the NHL. So I think there's nothing more that needs to be said about Rod Brind'Amour, quite frankly. He's done a great job with this Hurricanes team and will continue to do so in the future while their window, frankly, is on the precipice of starting to close as some of those contracts get closer and closer to expiring and as their goaltending situation gets less and less clear. But they're still going to be a great team. Not worried about that. Craig Berube, though, is now the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I know that one shocked a lot of people from how quick the change there came in Toronto. Sheldon Keefe was gone, and less than a week later, or maybe a week and a half later at the most, it wasn't more than 10 days, couldn't have been. Craig Berube is their coach. First thoughts on this, Jack, if you want to take it.
Well, I think you know what happened. They can't beat the Bruins in the playoffs, so they hired someone that can. I think that's kind of the joke that I came to. You know, 2019 still kind of gets on my nerves a little bit. But no, in all seriousness, I think with the talent that Toronto has and for how little that they've had to show for it over the past handful of years, I think they were sort of in a what the hell do you have to lose? I think they're in that sort of territory in terms of when they are hiring coaching. I think the biggest thing when you consider, you know, having a coach that's able to lead a talented bunch, like I know the Toronto Maple Leafs have, and are just looking for someone that I think can have that spark and lead them in the when it matters in the postseason, I think somebody with experience matters. And I know that sounds like a very, you know, no dip Sherlock kind of statement to make, but it's true. He's won a Stanley Cup with a, you know, St. Louis Blues team that was a, you know, gutsy, rough, just hard-nosed team that fought their way to a Stanley Cup, won a game 7 on the road in Boston to win it all. You know,
they were last place in the middle of the season too.
Right.
In January. Worst team in the league.
So I really think that, you know, I like the hire a lot. It did surprise me how quickly it happened, James. I do completely agree with you. I feel like, you know, in most situations when you see a coach let go right after a season, you usually would expect teams to play the market a little more, perhaps wait till the conclusion of all of the playoffs and let the market open up and see who the candidates are. But I don't dislike this trigger happy action at all. I really do think that he's somebody that really could give Toronto a chance going forward. And again, I really do think with like, I don't want to repeat myself again, but it's true. You know, with how much firepower that they do have on that roster and for how little they've been able to, you know, get done in the playoffs year after year, I don't really know who would have been a bad choice. I think it's now just about like continuing to play cards until you find somebody. Cause I think with how much skill that they have, You know, I really don't know if it's a skill issue, if it's a player issue at this point. When you start to see over and over again the same result, I try to cut coaches some slack because, again, they're not out there playing themselves. Sometimes coaches are at the mercy of their players, you know, their job security. At this point, the way that the Toronto Maple Leafs have been over the last several years, this is when I started to believe it was a leadership issue. So I actually really like the move.
It's interesting that both of you guys mentioned how quickly the Maple Leafs front office was able to turn around and make this decision. And it makes me think of two things quickly. The first was, well, if it happened so fast, there's no way you could have put that much thought into it. But then you think, well, if they did put that much thought into it, how long were they planning on replacing him while he was still the head coach, while the playoff run was still happening? Like, were they shopping, expecting to maybe just kind of lay down and die there? Like, but I think on the flip side of the quick coin, it is great to get the decision over and done with, because now, like, the work can start today with your new guy, new office, completely like new system, maybe if it has to be, but like just out with the old, in with the new, and start to get the team ready to make a new attempt. It's almost like restarting the window, but it's shorter, you know, like it's just buying like a new attempt at a cup for this Leafs team that has just been trying for so long with this core. And like, I think it would be really cathartic for the city of Toronto if this core finally lifts a Stanley Cup. And I mean, this is the head coaching experience they need now, maybe to get over the hump.
I'll leave it at this. Chief Craig Berube is seventh all time on penalty minutes as an ice hockey player in the NHL. 3,149 penalty minutes. Rick Tocchet is 10th with 2,972. Rick Tocchet was able to produce a terrific turnaround with attention to transition hockey and a hard-nosed, no BS coaching. If there's one team that I can think of that maybe could benefit from having that hard-nosed type of influence, that gritty style, that gnarly, just crazy, gritty hockey, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is the best hire they could have gotten. I'm upset the Devils couldn't get in on this action, but I'm just hoping that if it's possible, maybe Mike Sullivan isn't the coach of the Penguins and the Devils could take a look there. But I digress. That is just keeping you up to date on who is going where in terms of coaching staffs in the NHL. The Devils still without a head coach at the moment. But let's switch it back. We talked about Jacob Trouba winning the award for the Rangers, the Messier Leadership Award. We talked about Sasha Barkov winning the Selke Trophy. Very well deserved. So let's mesh the two and talk about this Eastern Conference final. Each of these two teams has been here before and been here very recently. The Rangers 2 years ago, the Panthers last year. The Rangers did not progress to the Stanley Cup final. The Panthers did. I think the similarities, though, end within these teams. There's not much more. They end with the fact that they both have fantastic Russian goaltenders. For me, these two teams play a different brand of hockey that's going to be a clash of styles, of ideas, and I think we're going to see a lot of this game won in the neutral zone and on the penalty sheet. If discipline does not play a factor into this series, color me very surprised. Jack, you covered the Rangers all season long. Here we are. The Eastern Conference Finals, you're going on Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
game
I
one
am.
Is game Wednesday. Two. Game two is on Friday. MSG is going to be bouncing. And if you ask me, I'm blanking on the name of the Panthers Arena. I know it used to be the BB&T Center, and then there's a different bank or something that bought it. Whatever.
It's in Sunrise. That's all I know.
Yeah, the Sponsorship Arena in Sunrise, Florida. That could also very well be a very, very good crowd for New York Rangers, for the New York Rangers and their fans. If I think back
well,
to
unless they put a limit on it like Carolina did. If they find a way to put a geographical locator. I think you could only buy tickets to the Hurricanes home games if you were geographically located in South Carolina, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia, which was their way of like making sure that the New York fans couldn't drive down I-95 and go to the game. I'm not sure if it's going to work the same way for the Panthers. I agree. But if they were worried about it, I think they would.
First of all, I love that move from the Carolina Hurricanes. Absolutely a great call. I think you should absolutely do everything you can to give yourself a home ice advantage. It's the playoffs. Yeah, you should be allowed to do that.
And it worked out well. Look, they're playing for an Eastern Conference final.
Well, unfortunately. But I don't think that would work in this case. Because how many former New Yorkers retire to Florida?
Oh, my God. All of them. Like, so many.
All of them. Everyone.
The other thing, and I don't want to get all businessy, but there's two options when you have something like this. If they sell directly to Florida, one of two things happens. Either every person that buys the tickets goes to the game, and then, yeah, you'll have a very Florida-dominant crowd. Or you have Florida people put them on the aftermarket, jack the hell out of the prices. But guess what? People are donating organs in this city, in New York, pretty much, to afford a ticket to a regular season Ranger game.
I was gonna say they're so used to those MSG prices. That's what I was gonna say. You can't jack the prices any higher than Madison Square Garden.
I was gonna say. So the only way that if they do this geographical, you know, selling, the only way it works is if they go to the games themselves, because these Ranger fans are nuts, dude. They put months rent into these hockey tickets.
This is true, but there's also every time the Rangers play away at the Florida Panthers, it's practically a home game for the Rangers because of all the former New Yorkers who now live in Florida. That I don't even think it's about people traveling. I think there's obviously going to be a contingent of that, but the majority of hockey fans in Florida are probably not Florida Panthers fans.
No.
And I think that
if anything, they're Lightning fans play a role.
And we've seen this all year. We've seen this all year too. Ranger fans travel well. I've seen clips on Twitter in random cities. I understand Arizona is kind of a weird one because they played in a college arena all year. RIP Arizona. But, you know, even like that was one of the videos that went viral where like it was literally majority Ranger fans. But no matter what city you're in, the Ranger fans travel well. So I can't imagine it's going to be any different in Florida.
I don't think it's about the travel, honestly. I think it's about the fact that New Yorkers live everywhere now. Mm-hmm. And
you see it with the Knicks too, not to get it's the same process with the other New York teams. The fans are everywhere.
You might even say that you see it with the New York Mets of all New York teams.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. The Mets will be playing against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and there will be plenty of Mets fans there who just happen to live in Arizona. Now that's not all we're going to talk about. We spent a while on the fans. I do think that is going to play a role. I do think the Rangers will have close to 40% of the attendance at these Panthers games, just because there's that many Rangers fans in Florida. Honestly, I think it could be 30% in that range. But what I will say, while the Panthers do have Sasha Barkov and they do have Sergei Bobrovsky, what they don't have is Artemi Panarin. And what he represents is the opportunity to be the biggest game changer, the single most influential player in this series. He has been that good. The fact that he's not in the heart conversation just shows you how insane the likes of Kucherov, McDavid, and McKinnon, and even Matthews, who wasn't on it, with 69 goals. That just shows you how crazy this NHL season was. There is not a single player not named McDavid or Draisaitl who is as good as Artemi Panarin left in the playoffs right now. That is true. Now, with that said, there has been a pattern in his career where in the biggest of biggest moments in the playoffs, is he there or not? Those questions have been asked. The Panthers are a team that thrives on grinding it out. You know their guys are going to show up. But you also know that their best guys are not as good as the Rangers' best guys. At 5-on-5, I do think the Rangers could struggle a bit. But if their best guys come up in big moments, it's their series to win. Jack, what do you think?
I think this is going to be the single toughest matchup that this Rangers team has ever encountered, not just this season, in the last five seasons, whatever you want to call it. This is going to be the single most testy series that they have ever played. And I think the biggest thing for me is going to be whether they can combat the physicality of Florida. Florida, anytime you talk about the Florida Panthers, you are a stone's throw away from talking about how much rats they are. They are a tough, hard-nosed hockey team that exhausts you. They wear you down. And I understand that you got physical, you know, guys that are a true presence on the ice for the Rangers. That's what's been, you know, they've been the best team in the league for a majority of the season. But if they, you know, the Rangers are a team that sometimes likes to get a little cute with it, likes to pass the puck a lot. Florida is a team, much like they just got off of the Carolina series, because they saw it with Carolina too. Florida is a team that is not at all conservative in their looks. They are just a team that shoots in volume and sprays pucks the same way that Carolina did too. So that's one thing that they need to be ready for, is can they, you know, match the intensity and match the frequency of Florida? Because I'm not, you know, Florida is just about, you know, I really do believe we have the two best teams. This is what people have been, you know, I think a lot of people would agree. We're now seeing finally the two best teams in the Eastern Conference finally going head to head. So I'm not, you know, I know it's a weird comparison to talk about it against teams that are lesser talent than Florida, but you've seen a couple times with the Rangers, especially in that Carolina series. I saw it more during the regular season, but in that Carolina series as well, where sometimes if a team is desperate enough, it shows. And the team that's desperate and goes in there will be good enough to beat the New York Rangers. We saw it in the conclusion of the regular season when Philly was still in the playoff chase. There's that crazy 6-5 game against the Rangers at the end of the season where they beat the Rangers in the Garden, scored like 3 in the third period or 4 in the third period, and won the game. So it's going to be about whether the Rangers can match the intensity of Florida, because like you said, James, they're a team that will fight you to the very end. And the biggest thing is I think this game is going to be won or lost by the forecheck. I really do think the Rangers are a team that likes to, you know, they're unique in their zone entries. They're unique in the way that they move down the ice. They go north-south. They also go east-west. If they, you know, they're a team that will go up the walls, they'll go down the sides, they'll throw pucks off the glass. So if they're, you know, if Florida is able to shut them down in their own zone and force them to the middle of the ice and take over the battle in the neutral zone, this is going to be a really tough series for New York. So I do think a lot of this is going to, we've seen that New York can score. You've seen Chris Kreider getting a natural hattie the other day. You mentioned Artemi Panarin, who this is the series of his life. Mika needs to show up in this series. This could be the biggest series of his life as well. But I really do think that this series is going to be, when you have two, and the same is for, it goes the same way for both teams, but I really do think when you have two elite teams going head to head, this game is going to be won by the small things.
Yeah. And I'm going to bring up two names that you didn't mention, because they're also, I think they're going to also play big roles, because they've been playing pretty big roles in the Rangers playoff run so far. Vincent Trocheck has just, he's been playing really, really solid. And if they could get continued production out of him as the playoffs roll on, that would be huge, because that's just another guy you don't have to worry about. And we've also seen flashes of the excellence of Alexis Lafreniere. A couple games in the first two series, he's broken out. He had a couple goals in game one against the Hurricanes, I believe. And if he keeps playing like that and the Rangers get production from everywhere else, these two teams are incredibly deep. I think it goes without saying that two of the best teams in the Eastern Conference are two of the deepest teams in the Eastern Conference. So I think it's going to go seven. I was a little disappointed that the Hurricanes couldn't like squeeze out game six and bring it back to seven at the Garden. They should have, but like the Rangers, obviously, I mean, they got the job done on the road. But I think this one's going to go to seven for sure. And I think we're going to get a game seven in the Garden that's going to be maybe even more exciting than the entirety of the Stanley Cup Finals. But I'm sure that's impossible, because if the Rangers are in the Stanley Cup Finals, every game will be more exciting than every other game the Rangers have played so far. But I think it's going to be a tough battle. The keys for Florida are just going to be stay aggressive and tenacious. And like you said earlier, Jack, the Rangers tend to get cute sometimes, and they don't make many mistakes. But when they do, Florida needs to jump on them as soon as they happen, because there's just not going to be that many opportunities against a team as solid as New York.
Well, you mentioned how exciting a Stanley Cup Finals would be. I think before we switch and talk about the Western Conference matchup, I think there's a clear preferred matchup final for the NHL here. There could be a Stanley Cup Final that could take place in Dallas and Florida, or I think they'd rather prefer to have the league's best star in Canada, of Edmonton specifically, and, you know, probably New York City. That matchup would probably
small,
be better
small
to
market.
Their pockets. Yeah, tiny market, 9 million people nearly in the city, and that's not even counting the commuters. So let's talk about the West Coast, baby. Not so much, really. We're talking about Texas and Western Canada. So I did not think the Oilers were going to be here, but you know who I did think would be here? The Dallas Stars. Did I think that they were going to make it easy against the make easy work of the Colorado Avalanche? No. Did I think that series was going seven? Absolutely. But did the Stars score two overtime goals in game six? Yes, yep. They did. Because that goaltender interference call was ridiculous when Cale Makar pushed. I'm trying to remember who the forward was. I think it was, ironically enough, Matt Duchene, former Colorado Avalanche star, now on the Stars, pushed into the goaltender. And that should have been a good goal, but it wasn't. Didn't matter. They scored later anyway. For my money, the Dallas Stars and Pete DeBoer, our old friend Tucker, he's been here before. He's been to a Stanley Cup before. Didn't go well, but this team is better than that team he brought to the Stanley Cup. Pains me to say it. That team that he brought in 2012, my favorite team of all time. But these guys have been that good all season long. They won the toughest division in hockey. And I don't think they've gotten enough credit for that yet. They've had home ice advantage throughout the playoffs and have played like it. For my money, the Dallas Stars are the favorite. They're a better hockey team than the Edmonton Oilers. And if I had to punch a ticket now, I'd punch a ticket for Dallas in the Stanley Cup Final. I think Wyatt Johnston is one of the best young stars that doesn't get enough attention in this league. But maybe I'm just biased because Eastern Conference, we don't hear enough about the West. He is an absolute stud. Joe Pavelski, ageless wonder. Jason Robertson is still only considered, at least in the mainstream, as just a goal-scoring forward. Meanwhile, he puts up points like nobody's business. And that's not even to mention Rupa Hintz. That's not even to mention Jake Ottinger, another potential snub, really, for the Vezina, if you think about it. This is a team that has the makings of a championship roster and have been to this point before. In the bubble, they were here. They were right here. Last year, they fell to the Kraken. Not to the Kraken. They beat the Kraken. Who did they lose to in the playoffs last year? Vegas?
Yes.
Lost to Vegas?
Yeah, it was a gentleman's sweep, I think.
Who quite frankly, were the best team in the league by a wide margin last year. So to have faced them in the first round and beat them. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, Tucker. The paradox of winning a tough matchup and going on and then facing a team who's perhaps inferior, but having played so many games and having gotten so exhausted, that catching up to you in the later rounds, that hasn't been a factor for these guys. They've just played against the Vegas Golden Knights and the Colorado Avalanche, the 2023 Stanley Cup champions and the 2022 Stanley Cup champions. Now they play Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers, and I still feel very confident that this team is the better of the two, and they should go to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think their handling of the Avalanche series was probably like one of the best case scenarios for them. We really thought they were going to be like hampered by that series against the Golden Knights. And we thought the Avs were going to make, I thought the Avs would kind of do decently against the Stars, at least like initially, just because they would have been tired, but it turned out to be the opposite. The Stars were hot. They still had the hot legs because they had been playing more recently. And eventually the series only goes to six. I think Colorado was hurt like from a team like morality not morale, like a team mentality morale, standpoint. Yeah, like a morale standpoint when they lost Nichushkin. When Nichushkin goes with the suspension, that's gotta hurt the team, like just kind of in terms of like bonding and trying to like stay focused on the objective. And it came out because it was still close, but Dallas still managed to get the upper hand. And they also win themselves some extra rest against the Oilers as well. So that since the Oilers and the Canucks went to seven games. But I think Dallas is well built for the challenge that is the Edmonton Oilers. It might be a worse matchup than their previous rounds, but I think it's pretty much on par, if not better, because the Oilers are really humming right now. So it's going to be a tough series regardless, but the Stars' defensive structure was extremely effective at limiting the pace of Makar and company in Colorado. The only two games where that didn't happen were the ones that Colorado won. So it's pretty telling that when Dallas is able to shut the speed down, they can get control of the game. Dallas also needs to stay out of the box. I'd feel like a bit of a parrot from two episodes ago and from today. We've already been talking about it, but stay out of the box. The Oilers' power play is the best. It's the class of the league, and they score almost every time.
One of the best ever, actually.
Seriously. And so, like, it has to be a primary objective of a team playing against the Oilers or against a team like the Rangers to stay out of the box at most, if not all, cost. But I think two guys who stand out for the Stars are going to be Wyatt Johnston, who's been having a great sophomore year, leads the team in goals in the postseason right now. And then just more Miro Heiskanen excellence with he's got 30 minutes per game going right now. Yeah, 30 minutes per game right now for him and leading the team in scoring with 5 goals and 8 assists. Just another day at the office for Mr. Heiskanen, getting it done for Dallas.
This is why I hate going third, because, you know, you guys just are so full of good
we
just points.
We get all the – get everything in.
You ended with the very first name that I was going to mention, and I hate you for it. I can never hate you, Tucker. No. First of all, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I believe Miro Heiskanen has been the most slept on. And I'm not saying that he's been disrespected or anything or whatever, but I think – if we're looking at who has been most, you know, valuable to their teams in this playoff run, Miro Heiskanen has been one of the most slept on players in this entire playoff series. And he's been just as valuable on the offensive end as he's been on the defensive end, which I think says a lot about him and how valuable he is to the Stars. I do also second you both in that I do think this is going to be one of the biggest series of Wyatt Johnson's life, especially as young as he is. The impact that he's made in his short time is truly remarkable. What I really think is unique about this series, and I was talking a bit about, you know, Stuart Skinner earlier, is I really think goaltending might be, I really think of all the series that we've seen in this playoffs, I understand the point of hockey is to score more than the other team. No, of course, you know, goaltending is important. I don't know if there's a series where goaltending is important more so than this one. And I say that more on the side of Edmonton, because there is, if we know a goalie that has been able to perform in the playoffs, it's Jake Oettinger. And if we know a goalie who is able to handle pressure, handle, you know, the best scorers in the league and keep his team in games and always give his team a fighting chance, it's Jake Oettinger. So, you know, on Dallas's end, until we're proven otherwise, that they are at least going to have a fighting chance whenever Jake Oettinger is between the pipes. Will Stuart Skinner be able to match that is going to be the biggest question for me, because we talked about how he's, you know, surprised everyone this year. We've talked about how, you know, important he's been to Edmonton in every round of the playoffs so far. And, you know, he got them through a tough series against, again, a pretty damn good Vancouver Canucks team. But Dallas is a roster that is one of the most unique in the league. And the reason why is because there is no in-between. You have an old half full of experienced veterans, and then you have some of the hottest young talent in the league on the younger half of the roster. You have quick guys who can score in volume, and can really skate circles around defenders. And then you have old, hard-nosed, experienced players who, many of which are still looking for that first Stanley Cup that they've never won before. It's really going to come down to, can the Oilers withstand? I don't think that this is going to be, I guess this is more where I'm saying that I'm favoring Dallas in this series. I don't see a scenario in which the Oilers beat or best the Dallas Stars. I only see a scenario in which the Oilers outlast the Dallas Stars. So that's, I think, the biggest takeaway or the biggest prediction I have for this series is, will they be able to stick with Dallas? Because for as experienced as this Oilers team is in the talent that they do have on this roster, Burley, as you mentioned, this is a core of this Oilers core is what we thought is supposed to be a dynasty by this point, and it's not. This is only McDavid's second conference final. So I really do think that it's going to take every last ounce out of the Oilers if they want to go to the Stanley Cup.
And looking back on that last conference final, if you remember 2 years ago against the Colorado Avalanche, that went in four games. Sweep for Connor McDavid and his Oilers, in case you don't remember. So they've got all this on their mind. They're trying to fight for what should have been done years ago, according to a lot of people, and that's players this good should have a championship. But there's context there. The team around them has not been deep enough. Blue line has always been an issue. Goaltending has always been an issue until this season, really. Stuart Skinner was a Calder nominee when he became the starter, took the job from Mikko Koskinen. And for the start of this year, really the front 30 games, he was dreadful and then picked it up and was one of the top 10 goalies in the league, really, for big stretches of it. He helped my fantasy team win the WFEV bracket this year, beat Nick Palmer in the final, picked Stuart Skinner up midseason, gave the snip to, I think, Logan Thompson.
I think you did have Logan Thompson, yeah.
Who, by the way, finished the season really strongly for Vegas, too. Yeah. So I digress on the goaltending of it all, but yeah, we've got this marquee matchup of Wyatt Johnston versus Zach Hyman in the Western Conference Finals. It's not Jason Robertson versus Connor McDavid, people. You get it right.
Who's this Connor McDavid guy?
Yeah,
who is this
on the
guy?
Tail of the tape, it says Curtis Billing on the playbill. This is Zach Hyman and Wyatt Johnston, baby. It's a new age in the Western Conference, and I could see it going either way. I like Dallas, but of course, with what the Oilers are capable of, and Tucker, you mentioned it, especially on the power play, there is no telling which way this could go. The Rangers are going to want to keep the puck against the Florida Panthers, but the Panthers are going to try to disturb them as much as possible, going to try to force that game to live in the corners. And who knows? It's going to be a stash of clash of styles, excuse me, in each of these two matchups, and whoever can play their game better will go to the Stanley Cup Final. Real quick before we wrap it up, everybody go around the horn. Who wins and in how many games? Start with the West. Tucker, go.
All right. I've got the Stars out here just for all the reasons that we've been saying and plus just that defensive structure I already mentioned. I think they're going to be able to translate and apply that structure to the speed of the Oilers, much like they did to the speed of the Avs, and they're going to be able to shut the Oilers down. So for that reason, I've got the Stars in five. I think the Oilers are this is very much – it's like another one of those years for the Oilers where it comes to an abrupt end in the playoffs, but I think it's because they've made this next step up. Like, they're now Western Conference finalists, so that's a lot. It's not enough that this Oilers team wants to do, but I think it's a big step forward, and the Stars are just – I think they want it. They want it bad. So Stars in five to be a little interesting, and then – for the ECF, I'll go with the Rangers in the Garden in seven games. You don't lose a game seven in Madison Square Garden. Like, even if the Panthers were objectively better than the Rangers, I would still say Rangers in seven because of the Garden. But since the Rangers are a little bit better, in my opinion, the Rangers will go to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Dallas Stars.
You did it again, Tucker. I'm getting sick of this, dude.
Burley, you gotta stop letting me go first.
Sorry. he's not third now.
No, that's true. Not, hold on. Let me think about what a Burley-esque response would be to this question so I can say exactly what he was going to say before he... No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm going to go – I will go a little different than Tucker. I'm going to say Stars in six, one game different. I think it's going to start off – I think it goes one of two ways. It either starts off back and forth, exchanging blows, you know, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, whatever you want to call it. And then I think Dallas just goes on a run to close out the series. Or similarly on the other end, you know, see the – have a similar kind of Rangers – Canes type structure where Dallas gets out to a hot start, Edmonton sneaks back in, Dallas comes out. Regardless of which way it goes, I do have the Stars in six. I just think they have enough of the edge. And Tucker, as you mentioned, I think part of it is literally just going to be firepower. I think Dallas wants this bad. That's not to say that the Oilers aren't a serious competitor. Again, whenever you could have, you know, the worst team, you could have the worst supporting core around you. Any team that has Connor McDavid on it is going to have some firepower and some edge. But with that being said, I really do think it's going to come down to the Dallas Stars. And I think it's going to be, you know, the young talent of the Dallas Stars that really sets them apart in this series, which I don't think that the Oilers have it to the extent that the Stars do. As far as the Eastern Conference, I'm going to go Rangers in seven. I don't see any way in which this series ends sooner than six games. I really don't. I think going either way, again, is as good as the Rangers have been all year, and as a team that I do think shapes up to be a little bit better by a slim margin than the Florida Panthers, I think if the Rangers won this series in less than six games, it would be a surprise. And I think if the Panthers won this series in less than six games, it would also be a surprise. So that's what I think is the beauty about a matchup that just really does bring the two best teams of a conference together to battle it out. But I do think it comes down to a game seven at the Garden, and I think the Rangers win in dramatic fashion.
Well, I'll be a little different, boys. I'll start with the West. I've got Dallas, and I've got them in six. I do think that series is going to go very similar to the way that Bruins-Panthers went. I think in the first two games, you're going to see lopsided scores. I think the Stars are going to prove that they're a better hockey team and win big. The Oilers are going to come back, and you're going to see McDavid turn up. You're going to see Draisaitl turn up. You're going to see Nuge and Hyman turn up. You're going to see Cody Ceci, Evan Bouchard chip in as well. And it's going to be a big Oilers win. And then the Stars are going to remember, okay, we're a much better team. We're not going to take penalties this game. They're going to win big. And then there's going to be a bunch of tight games that the Stars eke out, and they're going to go to the Stanley Cup final in six games. On the other side, well, one more thing I wanted to mention before I go to the other side. We talked about Miro Heiskanen. I think he was another kind of sort of snub for the Norris candidate. Hear about Rangers fans talking about Adam Fox being a snub. I would put Miro Heiskanen right in that category as well.
Absolutely.
Switching back to Rangers-Panthers. Jack, I agree with you. I don't see this series ending in six games or in less than six games. But if it were to, hypothetically, I could not see the Rangers beating the Panthers in four or five games. If it goes to that, I do think the Panthers would be victorious, because what we do know about Florida is they can play on the back foot, they can play on the front foot, and they will find a way to hurt you no matter what. The Rangers, I don't want to call them a one-dimensional team because they are not, but when they don't have their A game, they struggle. When they don't get to control the puck, they struggle. I know they've combated adversity in games against Carolina where they had less chances, but better chances, and they put them away. Florida is not going to give them space in front of the net. Florida is not going to give them odd man rushes as frequently as Carolina did. These are things that are going to hurt the Rangers. They thrive off these high opportunity chances because at 5-on-5, they do not create a lot of them. This is known around the league. If the Rangers cannot control the pace, they will have a tough time against the Florida Panthers. With that said, the Rangers might be a more talented team across the board, so they should be able to control the pace in at least half of the games of the series, right? For that reason, I see it going to 6 and 7. I have the Florida Panthers going to the Stanley Cup final. I do think the physicality and the way that they can disrupt the Rangers' rhythm in a way that no other team in this conference can could be enough to get them the win. And I do think it's
going
to be
chaos in the streets of New York.
The streets may run red with my blood in New York City. I don't mind. As long as it means Florida is in the Stanley Cup final, please make it happen. Please, Florida. But I will say this. Even if it goes the Rangers' way and they go back to the Stanley Cup for the first time since 2014, this will be one of the greatest goaltending matchups in playoff history. Book it now. You've got Vezina candidate Bobrovsky. You've got 2 years removed from his Vezina trophy, Igor Shesterkin. And I think they're both playing some of their best hockey all year long. And they're both different guys. Bobrovsky's more very reaction-based, very mobile goaltender. Shesterkin, while very agile, squares up to the puck early and anticipates. So they're very different in that way. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. Henrik Lundqvist has so much praise every time Sergei Bobrovsky plays, and he's in the intermission report. So I think we're going to see a battle for the ages between the pipes at the very least. Let's go around real quick. Tucker, you have Dallas in six, New York in – or Dallas in seven, New York in seven?
Or dude, Dallas in five.
Dallas in five, sorry. New York in seven. Yeah. Jack, you've got Dallas in six, New York in seven. I've got Dallas in six and Florida in six. And, boy, I hope I'm right. I really, really hope I am right. That is all the time we have on 5-on-3. We got through a lot, previewed the conference finals. And, Jack, you're going to get to go at the Garden. I'm so pumped for you.
Thank you.
I hope the credentials get sorted out, because I know it's always a madhouse trying to figure
it out. You know what's funny? I was sitting in – it was a great start to the morning. I saw you at work this morning over at 4 World Trade. And about an hour or two before I saw you, I'd just gotten out of a meeting at 9:30, and I sat down at my desk and I got a Gmail notification that the first word I saw was all caps approved. So I'll be there.
There to witness history when Sasha Barkov scores all seven goals. Well, that is all the time we have for 5-on-3. WFAV Sports is best.
You're just not ready. You're not ready for that Barkley Goodrow hat trick. You're just not ready for it.
Jimmy VC who? All right. Had to bring it back to our boy VC here on the pod. That's 5-on-3. That's Ben Tucker Austin. That's Jack Warner. Barrett Spritzer is cutting this up for us after I email him the video file.
Shout out, Barrett.
I've been James Burley. The Devils will be back in 2025. That is all the time we have. 5-on-3 is a production of WFUV Sports.
Kaapo Kakkonen will save the season.